so you take it with you. The rock, you never quite know what happened.
Well, I actually went looking for the rock. I don't know. He made it out of here.
Yeah, he understood the difference between himself and material energy.
Stop identifying.
Hari Om Sahana Bhavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahaviryankaravavahai Tejasvinavadhi Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sarigaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
Okay, summary of chapter 9. Nitya Dharma and Material Science and Civilization. Almost 4 years have now gone by since Lahiri Mahashai came to Godrum, and associating with the Vaishnavas of that sacred place has had a greatly purifying effect upon him. Now he is continuously chanting even whilst performing his daily chores. His lean frame is covered by sparse clothes. He has given up using any footwear, even wooden clogs. He has overcome the false pride of his high caste to such an extent that whenever he sees a Vaishnava, he immediately offers dandavats with the utmost and with the utmost humility places the dust from the feet of the Vaishnava upon his head. If anyone refuses to comply, he remains undeterred, using gentle force to achieve his goal. He is always looking for and eating eagerly the prasadam remnants of the pure Vaishnavas. One day, Paramahamsa Premdas Babaji spoke to him. Lahiri Mahashai, we see that you have freed yourself from all the habits of the non-Vaishnavas. Actually, we have received Beka initiation. But from you, we could still learn a great deal about Vairagya. Now, the only thing needed to complete your transformation is a Vaishnav name.
This
Becca means the cloth. Means, in other words, they take up Babaji Vesh. I'm just trying to figure out.
They're glorifying him by saying that we've actually taken initiation, but we could learn from you.
You know from the main text?
I just read it a little before I arrived.
Oh, okay. Lahiri Mahashai replied, "Sir, you are my Parama Guru. You are free to decide as you wish." Paramahamsa Premdas Babaji said, "You are from Shantipur, so I think the name Advaita Das is appropriate." Right? Shantipur, Advaita is from Shantipur. Lahiri Mahashai fell to the ground in humility to receive his new name. From that day on, everyone addressed him as Advaita Das, and even his little cottage got a new name, Advaita Kutir. Okay, not New Shantipur, right? Like that. Advaita Das had a friend from childhood named Digambar Chattopadhyay. Right? Chatto means four, so he means he was a Chaturvedi. That's the Bengali term for that. So that means at least at some point in the line they were big pundits and the four Vedas.
Yeah.
And Digambar means, you know, who, how you say?
Clothed in the four directions?
Yeah, you know, like that. You know, so it's kind of like either very renounced or something, you know, it's something very like that. Who had accumulated great wealth by holding important posts in the Muslim government. Right? Mm. So much for his position. Right? After retiring, he had returned to his village, Ambika, and inquired about his old friend, Kalidas Lahiri. Ambika's across the river. Mm-hmm. It's on the other side of the river from... That's where... What are those deities? There's Gorni Thai deities, the ones that they always have to close the curtains because they tend to go off with the Samkirtan party. Huh? Yeah.
Is this Ambika Kalna?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, Gauri Das Pandit's deities. Nityananda Prabhu was married there and like that. So that's on the other side of the river. Lord Chaitanya was brought there because he went wandering on that side. Mm-hmm. And then they brought him across, said, this is the Jamuna and everything, and took him to Advaitacharya's house. So it's from that place. Finally, he found out that his friend had renounced home and family and was presently residing in Godrum under the name of Advaita Das, spending his days in chanting Krishna Nam. Digambar Chattopadhyay was a pundit in the Tantra Shastras and well-versed in Muslim culture. He abhorred the word Vaishnavism, covering his ears whenever it was uttered in his hearing. Yeah, that's called demon. Right? Upon hearing about the present circumstances of his dear friend, he called his servant, "Hey, Vamana Das, immediately arrange a boat. I want to dash off to Navadvip without delay and save my friend Kalidas from disaster." Okay.
Mara's Muslim culture?
You're saying there's a problem in... That's like saying...
Military intelligence.
It's like saying... what do you call it?
Military intelligence.
Well, those two might go together. You mean it's like saying... what was it called?
It's a paradox.
Led Zeppelin.
Led Zeppelin.
Led Zeppelin.
Yeah. After a two-hour boat ride, he landed at the pier of Godrum Dham. Accompanied by four other gentlemen, he arrived at Advaita Kutir. Right? They always come with backup, right? At least it's not 100 this time. Yeah. Digambar had always been very generous and open by nature, and upon seeing his old friend, he was clearly extremely pleased. Right? So in other words, there's the social thing and the etiquettes and interaction. Then there's philosophy.
Yeah.
You know, so that's the thing, is that the culture is always the same. Mm-hmm. And then there's the philosophy of you know, what someone believes, but the culture remains, they interact properly. You know, like that. That's the advantage in the Vedic, is that everybody has the same culture, so there's a ground for everyone to interact nicely. Mm-hmm. Then there's, you know, opportunity to discuss philosophy and everything. Advaita Das received him warmly. "Welcome, dear brother. Come and sit down." Taking a seat, Digambar reciprocated with tear-filled eyes these sentiments of friendship and affection. He burst out saying, "Dear brother Kalidas, what shall I do? You have embraced the path of renunciation and rejected the devas as well as dharma. I have come from my life in the Punjab with great expectations." Like, so in Punjab he must have been, that's where he was doing government service for the Muslims. "However, back home in Shantipur, I have found that all our childhood friends have passed away. I had hoped to find you in Shantipur, thinking we could pass the rest of our lives in the enjoyment of each other's company. However, alas, fortune has forsaken me. And just look at you. You are like the ox dung, which, unlike cow dung, can be used neither for cleaning the house nor in any religious ceremonies." Right?
Nice to see you too.
Yeah, great to see you also. Yeah. Yeah. "We tantrics are seekers of absolute knowledge." Okay, yeah. "Worshippers of the goddess Mahavidya." Right, so it means that the Mahavidya, because the Dasa Mahavidya, so there's the 10 knowledges. But the thing is, this is interesting, is that something that's so based in ignorance, then it's given the name knowledge, right? Because the Dasa Mahavidya means the 10 different forms of Kali, I mean of Durga, and then what each one does, what the nature is, and that. So there is a whole psychological thing to deal from there. But the problem is it's based on, you know, the someone's attracted because of the position of ignorance, you know.
Yeah.
That's,
yeah.
Yes.
It mentioned there that he knew Muslim culture and now he's country. So what's the...
No, he knows because he was working with them. But he's a Hindu, so they'll remain Hindus. Like that.
So they didn't become Muslims like...
Not necessarily. No, they didn't become Muslims.
I mean, they even received the name that they received.
That's there because they're so big, and so he wasn't probably that big in the post. Means he was there, but he means one was the treasurer and one was the prime minister for the Nawab. So naturally they're close. His whole kingdom depends upon them. So he would call them by and give them some name so he doesn't call. But if you're just an officer in the government and sitting in some office somewhere, I don't think anybody really cares as long as you do your job nice. Like that. Because the thing of being really means, I mean, the original ones weren't so nice. But it's actually the grandson, I think, of Akbar that was the real problem. He started the really anti-Hindu kind of thing. But Akbar, because this would have been more around his time. You know, they were fairly open. Like Birbal. It means he was Hindu. You know, Tan Sen was Hindu. They weren't expected that they had to be Muslims. Right? Just, you know, because they were very good. In other words, if you were so good, they left you alone. If you were kind of good, then better have a kind of good Muslim. You know what I'm saying? But if you're so excellent that by you not being there, they lose something, they keep. So therefore, you had Tan Sen as one musician, then 30 Muslim musicians. So that was the court musicians. But no one could pass him, so therefore, if there had been a better Muslim, then they would have been in that position. But there wasn't, so they leave it. Like that. But I think later on, then it was kind of like, you know, one or the other. Like that. Okay. We tantrics are seekers of absolute knowledge, worshippers of the goddess Mahavidya, Durga Devi. This knowledge is useful now and also later. By it, we are happy now and will be so in the hereafter. Right? In other words, we're enjoying now, we'll enjoy later. Right? So in other words, they've just regulated their life. They're into just being happy. They're basically sense enjoyers, but they're agreeing to regulate their lifestyle in that way. And so then that's beneficial for them. So it will be uplifting. So in the hereafter, it's not necessary. The hereafter means, you know, they'll be in, you know, Durga Devi's planet, but it means they'll be in her realm. Right. I guess that's the nice thing about worshiping Durga. You're always in her place, right? You don't go somewhere else. You don't have to worry, right? You Vaishnavs consider yourselves happy now, but we Tantrics do not consider your renounced way of life as happiness. And in the final judgment, there will be no end to your misery. I am confounded as to why people become Vaishnavas. Just note how we Tantrics relish our meals of meat and fish, etc. We wear fancy clothes and such. This is enjoyment. We are more civilized and expert in material science, while you are denied the pleasures that that these things provide. And in the end, there will be no moksha for you. Right? Because they figure there will be moksha. They're going beyond moksha. Yeah, of course, there is no moksha for the Vaishnavas. Who wants moksha? Because as we said, actually, as we're pointing out, moksha is an illusion. Because the soul is never actually bound. He only thinks he's bound. You know, it's like a dream. You think you're being chased by a tiger. You never are. So when you wake up, it's not that now you've been freed from the tiger. No, the tiger never was chasing you. Right, so in that way, then, you know, we're not worried that there'll be no moksha, because, you know, it's Advaita Das, why do you say that there will be no moksha for us? Digambara, if one rejects Ma Nishtarini, the mother of liberation, then one cannot be liberated. That applies to you, or even Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva. These guys are tough. Huh?
Yeah.
Ma Nishtarini is the Adya Shakti, original potency. Right? It means she is the original potency, but they don't catch that. That doesn't mean that Shakti comes from Shaktiman, right? Somehow or another, they think Shakti just functions on its own. But where does Shakti function on its own? It has to come from Shaktiman. She has created Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva, and is now maintaining them. Advaita Das, is Ma Nishtarini a spiritual being or a material object? Right. So instead of going, you know, no, this, that, he just goes, okay, so then what is she? You know? She is the Digambara. She is the personification of the conscious, spiritual energy, and independently willful. Purusha is created by her wish. Like that. Advaita Das.
Right, so you understand?
Huh?
They follow Samkhya.
Yeah. Okay. The of course they have an element of shanky in there, but
karma mimamsa.
But independently willful. Yeah, well, it's kind of a funny. Yes. Yeah, because they're going to, they follow their own tantric shastras, you know, so they'll be strict. They'll have gurus and everything like that. But the point is they're still better situated because of the principle of how the culture is in place of shastra, guru, you know, regulation, ritual, like that, you know, these kind of elements. And they're, you know, they follow the culture and everything like that, but they try to enjoy the culture. That's why they're following it. But still, the situation is better because if you can adjust their perspective, their lifestyle and everything's in place.
Yeah.
So the problem is, if you can't adjust their consciousness, then they're not very well. They, you know, they'll end up being with you know, Durga, but they'll end up as the gunas. That's why there's so many gunas. These are the gunas, right? You know, so all those various, you know, how you say, their unique associates, you know, like all the different ghosts and pretas and this and that. Because the meat and all that, they offer to her, but she doesn't eat it because she's Vaishnavi. So she offers it to them. So actually, they're all eating ghost prasad, right? So then the natural thing is that's where they're going to end up, right? Because they're only seeing her as the supreme, but she's only supreme in the material world. You know what I'm saying? But it's not supreme in the, you know, actual cause of manifestation. It's just she's the one in charge. Right? So they'll only end up in that position. And they can't get higher than that. Oh. Then what is Purusha and what is Prakriti, right? Because they get right into Purusha Prakriti. But Purusha is created by her wish because she's independently willful, right? You know, so that supreme, you know, so they're enamored by the feminine element, like that. But they're enamored in the way that they can enjoy it. See, this is the thing, is that they enjoying means you're controlling, but at the same time is there, you know, that element of that willfulness, because willfulness is, for us, is the mode of ignorance, right? Mm-hmm. So they don't understand is that that's what they're attributing, right? It's actually independent, meaning that she functions without, you know, how you say, she doesn't require us, like that. She just carries out giving the reactions to whatever we do. But the thing is she's working under the Lord's direction. Digambar, Vaishnavas engage only in bhajan. They have no knowledge of fundamental philosophical truths, right? Because he asked the question, means, well, what are you saying about it? Not that I don't know anything.
Yeah, yeah.
But then this is their comment, right?
Yeah.
Like that. Purusha and Prakriti are like the two halves of a chickpea. Although they have separate identities, in fact, they are one. When the outside skin is removed, they are two. But when the skin covers the pea, they are one. Right? Again, the chickpea is used quite often in philosophical circles. Right? The Purusha is a spiritually conscious entity, while Prakriti is inert matter. You know, so now this is the fun, is that she's the personification of consciousness, spiritual energy, independently willful, and she is the, while Prakriti is inert matter. Right? So it's just kind of like... Yeah, that's the problem. See, because of the mode of ignorance, and that they don't notice they do that.
That's fascinating.
Yeah, no, it's far out. The undivided and undifferentiated condition of Purusha and Prakriti is Brahman. Right. See, but again, they can't tell the difference in Purusha between the supreme Purusha and the individual Purusha, because the living entity, being part and parcel of the Lord, manifests, you know, has the qualities of the Lord in minuteness. So the same qualities are attributed to both, but one is unlimited and one is minute. But they can't tell the difference, so they unfortunately attribute the unlimited to the minute, or, you know, like this, or vice versa. They can't quite tell. Advaita Das. The Ma Nishtarini you are talking about, is she the Prakriti or the Purusha? Was there somebody behind that, or that was just stuff? Okay, so it's just stuff. Okay, it was just the Prakriti, the Purusha didn't go with that. In other words, the sheath had been separated, yes, something like that, so they didn't go down together, right? Okay. Okay, the Purusha is a spiritually conscious entity, while Prakriti is inert matter. Yeah, so it's funny. So, is she Prakriti or the Purusha? Digambar, Ma Nishtarini is Prakriti, and the father is Purusha. Advaita Das, and who are you?
Right? Yeah, that's good.
Digambar, when the soul is covered by the illusion of Maya, he is Jiva. And when he is liberated from Maya's influence, he is Sadashiva. Guys deserve to be shot. Right? That's on a good day. Advaita Das. So are you Purusha or Prakriti? So here is that he becomes Sadashiva, but he was saying is that the father is Purusha, right? She's Prakriti, father's Purusha. But she creates Purusha, but then somehow or another is then, you know, it's how you say, Purusha is conscious and she's not. Mm. So you see the impersonal element is there. But so they have some understanding, but somehow or another not really properly. Mm. Because the Tantra simply means ritual. Yeah. But because they're in the mode of ignorance, then they take Shiva as supreme, and or Durga as supreme. So then they get caught up in all this. But the elements of Shakti means that's not a problem. The point is there ultimately the Purusha? Where is that position of Purusha? Because it's like Vaishnava means worshipping of Vishnu, right? Karshna means worshipper of Krishna. Gaudiya means worshipper of Radharani. Right, so that means is we're a worshipper of Shakti, right? But the point is worshipping Shakti in her service to Shaktiman. That's the difference. The others stop at that point. It's just they worship Shakti, and that's all, for their own pleasure. But I'll get, like he's saying, we'll get the benefit now. We get the benefit later. Hey, it's win-win, you know. So the point is it's a matter of we're assisting Shakti in service to Shaktiman. That's the.
But if they consider themselves Purusha.
Well, that was his next question. Who are you? The soul, it means when he's covered by illusion, then he's Jiva. So in others, they say when he's not covered by illusion, then, you know, he becomes Brahman or he just goes to the great spiritual sleep or something, you know.
Why would they worship somebody who is inferior? That's the first thing, like Prakriti. As he said before. That
because now we're Jiva, so we have to worship her to become Sadashiva.
And after they become Sadashiva, they kind of kick her out?
I don't know. I think we'll find out. Yes, I think we'll find. Yeah. No, because he's leading him through these things. Because as he's going and explaining, you can see it's not consistent.
Handing him more rope.
Yeah.
But it's interesting, his questioning, he starts with Prayojana, Moksha, and then he goes back to Sambandha. He's asking about who's the Jiva, who's the Ishwar, what's Prakriti.
Yeah, because then what's your goal? Because then you can really understand what's the thing. Because otherwise you get all these things, but what's its actual goal for?
Yeah.
So then it becomes, it becomes good that way.
Yeah.
It's a nice way of questioning.
Yeah.
Because generally speaking, people don't necessarily know what their goal is, or it's like, but okay, so how you're in it? So what's your goal? You know, to attain heaven or this or that? Okay, so then how does this go back? And then you see that they don't actually connect all these things.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So are you Purusha or Prakriti? Because he said he's Jiva, which then puts him under. But at the same time, it's when he's liberated from Maya's influence. Right, but the thing is somehow or another, this Ma Nishtarini, she's the greatest in that. So why would he want to be liberated from her influence? Right, then he's Sadashiva. So, are you Purusha or Prakriti? Digambar, I am Purusha, and Ma Nishtarini is Prakriti. So long as I am in the illusory condition state, she is my mother. However, when I'm liberated, she becomes my wife. Okay, so that's why it's that, you know, we'll be, yeah, they're weird guys. Tantrics are weird. They're just downright, you know, how it's a wholesale weird. Those guys. You know, so yeah, okay. So therefore, moms take care of you now, so we enjoy, like you said, nice food, nice clothes, everything like this. But then he'll become Sadashiva. But then the problem is that, so how many Sadashivas are there going to be? You know,
it's kind of like Oedipus complex.
They're just weird, these guys. It's just weird.
But Chankhya could also be in that category, more or less, as we read today. Because she has to be, you know, said everything is nice, and then...
Yeah, you could, but there wouldn't be the personal interaction and all that, because there's that harmony. So you can say there's that harmony of Purusha and Prakriti, but there's no as such relationship. They're just eternally together. But there's no consciousness on either part, so it's not like there's anything.
And here?
But here is your conscious, because Sada Shiva means that you're the husband. So Shiva is the wife of Durga, so therefore then you become the husband. Right? You know, so you can see why these guys never actually get very far. Right? That's why they end up as ghosts and goblins and this and that, you know. Means that's his position. He is a Dvaita. He is Sadashiva. Like that. Because Sadashiva is... The position is you have the element of Narayan, but at the same time you have the Shiva. You know, because Narayan, there's that mood where he's the destroyer, because Vishnu is a creator, maintainer, and destroyer. Though he does that through the offices. But Sadashiva is Vishnu, but... that transformed element. So it's of where he deals with the material energy, because Vishnu doesn't like that. So that's Advaita Charya. Okay. Advaita Das. Without doubt, I have now grasped your philosophy well. You will change from being the son of your mother to being her husband. Tell me, where did you learn such ideas? Right?
Fair question.
Digambar, my friend, I am not wearing blinders like you. You are only interested in the Vaishnavas alone. I have associated with many sannyasis, brahmacharis, mystic tantric yogis, and so on. In addition, I have intensively studied the tantra shastras before I could acquire this knowledge. Right? It's like, yeah, okay. If you wish, I can school you and prepare you too. So he didn't even catch it, that what he had just said, you know. Advaita Das thought to himself, what a terrifying idea. However, he replied, could you kindly explain your conception of civilization and what is material science, right? Because he said that, you know, we know all these different cultures, we have all the science, we're getting all the benefits, you know, like that. Is that, you know, we're able to get benefit from modern science while you're not, you know. He doesn't even have shoes, right? So... Okay, Digambar. Civilization means to converse well in a sophisticated society, to dress in a manner that pleases others, to eat food and conduct oneself in a way which is not repellent to others. Actually, you Vaishnavas follow none of these manners. You do not mingle in societies outside your own. And in general, your behavior is unsocial, right? Because that's the definition of a madhyamakar. He doesn't do that, right? So after saying all this, he can go, thank you.
Yeah.
I'll take that as a compliment.
Yes.
The Vaishnava, so in other words, there's the material culture, and then there's the Vaishnava culture. But the point is, within the Vaishnava culture, then these things are done properly. Mm. Right? Because he's converses well in a sophisticated society. Means because the philosophy that the Vaishnavas are discussing and all that is very, very, you know, very sophisticated. you know, the discussions are held. And they dress in a way that pleases others than what is within the culture that people find is nice. And they eat food and conduct oneself in a way that's not repellent to others. So within the society, it's just outside. It's not, because outside is technically not necessarily civilization, right? It means you interact according to the, if you have to interact, but here they don't have to interact, right? It's not that he went there. We have to remember that our Chattopadhyay here came to him, right? You know, so it's that. But if someone was a Grihastha, then he would have to interact and he would deal and he'd follow these things. The Vaishnavas have not yet learned what it means to entertain people with sweet words. Whenever they meet somebody, they directly exhort the person to chant Hari Nam. Are there no other civilized topics to discuss? Your dress turns people away, and so they refuse to offer you a seat at any kind of social event. A tuft of hair tied at the crown of the head, strings of tulsi beads hanging around the neck, dressed scantily in a loincloth, this is the appearance. In addition, you only eat potatoes and roots. Yes. The Vaishnavas are not at all civilized.
I like it.
Yeah. Dvaita Das determined that if he were to start a quarrel and Digambara went away angered, it would be a great relief. So he said, human life is short and inevitably has numerous disturbances. Thus, with our limited time, it is imperative to serve the Supreme Lord, Sri Hari, with unmotivated simplicity. The culture and sophistication which you present as synonyms are merely exercises in self-deception. Like he's called civilization and sophistication as that they're synonyms. Right? Sophisticated means it's very nicely developed, very refined. But it's not necessarily that the culture that one's following is refined. If a human being remains on the path of truthfulness, his life is honest and simple. Leaving the straight path for that of deception, he becomes sly, engages in unscrupulous dealings, and tries to hide his crookedness behind a facade of sweet words and postured civility. Right? It means, in other words, those who deal in the really kind of more sophisticated high-end society know that it's all a show.
Yeah.
Because it's so how well you can play the show. That's how well. But the point is you do that, you get your facility. Point is people want to be recognized in society. They want a position. They want facility. So some don't like to play the game and claim they'll get it. And a few do. And those who are play the game and they get it. But it's understood what it is, you know. No one would say that it's real, right? You know. Truthfulness and simplicity are laudable human characteristics, whereas the culture and sophistication you speak of generally lack these qualities. Right? True culture, in its pristine state, shorn of all immorality, is found amongst the Vaishnavas, and the culture of the non-Vaishnavas is tainted by sinful ways. Real culture means shabhyata, worthiness to participate in a shabha. Oh, shabhyata. Serious, truthful assembly, in other words, simple decency. But the contemporary definition of culture is simply a method of masking mischievous internal motives, which are gradually further perverted into deceit. Right, and it so clearly describes, you know, present culture, but this is written, you know, 150 years ago, right? Because it's always been like that. Yes.
Interesting, because you hear people in our movement making the same arguments as Digambara.
Yeah.
yeah. Of course. That's why these things are done. Because, in other words, the mundane distractions are always the same. But due to illusion, you think it's new and fresh and unique. And I've studied so many things, therefore I've come up with this conclusion. No, you could have studied or not studied, and you would have been just a much illusion. Just now you feel it's a little bit more sophisticated. You have a few more fancy words of philosophy to say. But otherwise, the same principle is there. You know, you just want to control and enjoy material energy. Right? In other words, now I am not in control. But I don't want to be in the position that I'm actually bound and I'm therefore suffering. So therefore, you know, the material nature is seen as the mother, because the ones that she's taking care of everything. Problem is you do good, she deals with you nicely. You do bad, she deals with you, you know, strictly. You know, the way any, you know, proper mother will do. So that is there, but the point is then they're saying if you become good, then you'll become the husband. How does that work? No, you become good, then you become a good son. You know, like that, you know. If I'm bad, I remain the son and I get punished, but if I'm good, I become the husband. Is this a little weird?
Mothers get arrested for stuff like this.
Huh?
Mothers get arrested for stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah, no. Digambar, just realize that today's modern civilized man considers the contemporary culture to be the actual height in the progress of humanity. And that a person without such culture should hardly be considered a human being. Right? So he's saying this there. It's the actual height and progress of humanity. I kind of just as a funny thing on this, the ego and all that. I'm not sure when it was. It was sometime, I think, in either late 1800s or early 1900s, very early, that there was a move to close the patent office. Because they figured everything that could possibly be invented, they already did, because they had reached the pinnacle of society. Like that. Like that.
And that the scientists had discovered everything that was to know.
Yeah, everything there was to know. It's amazing how what they really, you know, how you say. What was this? What was that? What was it? Belly Potch? Something like that. Epo, belly poke, something. It means the golden age.
Belly poke.
Belly poke. Belly poke. Yeah, and it reaches the pinnacle of everything like that.
Yeah.
And then the car came along. Right, messed that all up. Okay.
Airplane.
yeah, those guys. But, one of the brothers, he spent his whole life fighting legal cases against everybody else who was coming up with the ideas of flight. Yeah. One worked on how to make an airplane. The other one just fought, you know, everybody else. Well, if he had helped his brother making airplanes, then they would have been the leaders in airplanes. But instead, he had to do it all alone because the other one was there, so everybody else surpassed him. Funny, huh? The present understanding of decency is that men and women should dress in fashionable clothes and ornaments to cover their faults. Advaita Das, right? In other words, you dress nicely and then no one notices that you're not cultured, right? You know. I mean, it works, like Putana. She dressed nicely, so everyone thought she was cool. Yeah. Advaita Das. It is up to you to ponder over these matters and decide whether this modern philosophy of life is actually good or bad. Personally, I notice that modern educated men are shrewd and sly, opportunistically observing and taking advantages of the changing times. They favor this so-called civilization as it provides a means to mask their ill motives and degradation. Right? Because you can't say, oh, why do you say someone said no, but look at the good side. And if someone has good, well, no, but there must be some fault. You know, it's like it's opportunistic.
Yeah.
Such shrewd men protect the so-called high pedestal of their culture with futile debates and violent physical threat. Right? 'Cause that's the point. When you go to discuss it, then this is what you get: futile debates or violent physical threat. What can an actually intelligent person gain from their society and culture? Digambar, actually some people consider that knowledge and culture are simultaneously expanding by the civilization. And if the trend continues, this earth will become like heaven. Notice when he changes from the philosophy into the culture, then he's just discussing it he's not getting offended, because he could easily get offended by what he had said before. But no, because the society, it's like this, it's so nice, they're just so illusioned, right? It's just so naturally just... So this is the point, you don't discuss philosophy with atheists. But you can discuss the social and they'll be happy to talk all day about this and that, and you can have a different opinion and, you know, like that. More culture, this goes more smoothly, less culture, this a little bit more on the futile debates and violent physical threat. But you know. Advaita Das, okay. If the trend continues, this earth will become like heaven. Advaita Das. These are hallucinations of opium eaters, and those who believe in such ideas are glorified fools. Yet one who proselytizes this view is an even more amazing specimen of a fool, right? Like that. Glorified fools, but then the best specimen of those who preach it. Right? So Madhu also says that. The one who preaches it gets he's 100 times more the fool than the one who just lives it. Knowledge is of two kinds, paramartika, spiritual, and lokika, material. I do not perceive anywhere that spiritual knowledge is expanding by the progress of material knowledge. Actually, I generally see that spiritual knowledge is being perverted and misinterpreted in contact and concert with the focus upon material knowledge. Right? You misinterpret the spiritual to match the material. You know, that's this is proper to do and it's okay. And after all, is there actually any eternal relationship between the jiva and material knowledge? Right? Because you're only jiva when you're conditioned. So is there actually any connection between them? Right? So material knowledge means you're bound, so there is there. But the point is that what about you come to the transcendental state? Then what about all that? So then what's the meaning of all this? With the escalation of material knowledge, man's attention has been drawn towards the multifold varieties of external phenomena and distracted from the origin of all knowledge, the transcendental absolute truth. I must acknowledge that the increase of secular material knowledge is followed by a shallow, sophisticated culture, right? The two go together. Right? The more it's secular, the more the culture becomes shallow. You know, the more that it's not secular, the more deep it is. However, this is a bad omen for the jiva, leading him along the path to spiritual self-destruction. This human life is short. Therefore, like the wayfarer at the inn, the jiva must diligently prepare for spiritual realization during the travels of his limited lifespan. It is foolish to waste time trying to improve arrangements at the inn during one's short visit without concern for one's destination. Right? Means if you're visiting the inn, you don't try to improve the inn. Right? You just stay for how long you're supposed to and then move on. Right? You know. If more and more time is wastefully spent in the pursuit of material knowledge, less time will be left for spiritual realization. As I see it, we should use material knowledge to help in acquiring the basic necessities for the maintenance of this body, while leading a simple life dedicated to spiritual realization. Right? So, in other words, material knowledge is useful in that it gives you an occupation in which you can maintain the body. More than that, it doesn't have any value. It doesn't have a value on its own. Unfortunately, it's given credit that it has a value. There's something glorious about knowledge. But the point is it's only knowledge how to maintain the body. Right? It's not actually connected with the soul. So, okay, yes, it's great for the body, but we're not the body, we're the soul. So therefore, the absolute knowledge is more important. There is absolutely no need of excess material knowledge and its concomitant sophisticated culture. Right? It means what do you need extra stuff for? You know? It's just like, what's this one? I'm not sure when it was. Maybe it was 1600s. That there was one, you know, how you say, Italian, you know, like aristocrat or something, maybe nobility, something of some high rank that his, you know, opinion was had some meaning. And he was saying, what's the need of all this, you know, external sophistication of a fork? You know what I'm saying? You know, you can eat your pasta, you can eat very easily with your fingers. What do you need a fork for? You know, because in other words, they always ate with their fingers. So all this, they create all the sophistication of all these different things. You know, let alone that he know that there'd end up being three forks sitting over there. You know, let alone one. Right? You know, so that's the point, is that the more this knowledge, the more they put all this sophistication on. You know, it's just that depending on what mode, and it looks a little bit this way or that way. You know. Let us leave this topic for a moment. Tell me, what do you actually mean by Prakritika Vigyan? Digambar. Prakritika Vigyan is natural material science that is found in the Tantra Shastras in many different areas. It means because you have natural science, and then you have all these synthetic sciences. Right? So the natural is how the material energy works. So it's basically a shankhya. Yeah. Like that. So that's not actually technically a problem, but the point is it should be used for self-realization. Right? But they'll use it for either karma or jnana. That's the difficulty. Okay. Prakritika Vijnana is constituted of whatever systems, knowledge and beauty are exhibited in the material nature of this world. For instance, there are Dhanurvidya, Ayurveda, Jyotirvidya, the art of music and dance, and the like, which are the different branches of Prakritika Vijnana. Unfortunately for themselves, the Vaishnavas do not care for or make research into Vijnana, science. Right? So now he's brought out, means we've already dropped the other elements that are just occupational. The as they become more and more enamored by the making the occupation more and more sophisticated, then the culture also becomes more and more shallow along with that. So now he's gotten into material science, meaning natural science. Okay, and they're saying the Vaishnavas, they don't care for all this. Advaita Das. You just said that the Vaishnavas do not care about Vijnana. I disagree. The pure spiritual knowledge that the Vaishnavas study is actually Vijnana, extremely scientific and experiential. Right, because it's scientific and experiential, it means that you can actually take the Shabda and bring it down to be able to experience it, right? Pratyaksha, right? Because the pratyaksha means that the senses and the sense objects are interacting, so you can experience it. But it's done based on authority. Okay. But he's mentioned here is that vijnana, he's taken the word vijnana as science, but it's that you're only talking about science meaning the aparavidya. We're talking about the paravidya. Paravidya is the superior of the science, because the apara is only to know the para. Right, because before he was saying, by if you have the proper knowledge in that, you liberate yourself. Yeah. Right, so the point is which knowledge actually liberates? Yeah. So he's thinking this knowledge liberates; it doesn't. There are two kinds of knowledge. On one hand, there is Vishaya Jnana, material knowledge, which is acquired by human beings through the bodily sense organs, that are impure and thus unsuited to perceive spiritual objects. These material sense organs are only of use in the maintenance, of the conditioned soul's material condition. On the other hand, there is the science of the Supreme Self, which delves into the actual spiritual truth. This is known as Shuddha Jnana, pure spiritual knowledge, which is eternal and forms the basis of the devotional service of the Supreme Lord performed by the Vaishnavas. In all respects, Vishaya Jnana is distinct and opposite from Shuddha Jnana and has no connection with it, right? Because it functions on its own, it's connected with the world. It means you can, through devotional service, connect it, but it's not inherently connected. Yeah. You propose that Vishaya Jnana is alone Vijnana and that the material knowledge of Ayurveda, etc., has to be separated from Shuddha Jnana to attain the status of scientific Vijnana. However, this usage of the term is incorrect because materialistic science is not Vijnana in the true sense of the word. It's knowledge, it's Jnana, it's not Vijnana. Mm. So he's taken the word Vijnana and applied it to material knowledge by separating it from the spiritual and then calling it Vijnana. Mm-hmm. When it's only spiritual, it's actually Vijnana. The other is just Jnana. Yeah. Right? Because that's what they do before. You separate off the Supreme Purush, and then you give all the definitions of that to the individual jiva. So it's always by separating off the higher, then they try to attribute the higher qualities to the lower. Yes.
Why can't material sense be called as vigyan?
Vigyan. Because it means how is it the realization of the higher principle? You have knowledge and then you have realization of the knowledge. So what's the realization of material knowledge? The realization of material knowledge is that it's part of the Lord's creation. It's coming by the Lord. You know, it's powered by the Lord. It's for engagement in His service. You know what I'm saying? That's the actual vigyan. So it's the spiritual understanding that makes it worthwhile. Because the point is, if you have material knowledge, if you don't use it in the Lord's service, then what's the meaning? It just keeps you here. Right? Because humans have to go to such extent to learn material knowledge, but all they are is so-called sophisticated. Well, the animals, it's like they do things that humans can't figure out. Right? There's this bird. It comes along, picks up grass, and it weaves this nest. It hangs it on the tree, right? But there's nothing, means it's only the grass itself is holding it to the tree, right? And it's totally waterproof. I mean, it's just a bunch of grass, right? And scientists can't figure out how it's put together. So where did it learn that? You know, it didn't go to school, right? They went to school, they can't figure it out, so. You know, so they're able to do all these nice things, you know? Does that make sense? You know, you have to really plan to catch a mouse. The cat just does it. You know what I'm saying? So all these things is that some material knowledges are wasting their time when the animals already have it and they're already doing it so well. You know what I'm saying? So if the knowledge doesn't result in knowledge of the Supreme and our relationship, then it can't be called vigyan. It's just knowledge. You know, but the point is so much of it is useless knowledge. They go into so many areas that's not actually very important. Right? Yes.
By separating off from Shuddhigyan, then drop it to the level of avidya.
Yes, yeah, then it becomes avidya. Yeah. So therefore then the mode of ignorance, the element of I'm the enjoyer, the inability to tell what's right and wrong, you know, so therefore is now material energy is the mother, then she'll be the wife, and all these different things. So these are all just symptoms of the mode of ignorance. You know, is that, you know, if you're bound, you know, you're bound, so then you're you know, illusion, so you're here, and then when you have knowledge, you'll be liberated, but then the point is then enjoying all these things here, that's the symptoms of someone who's not on that transcendental platform. So why is that okay? So in other words, if you're enjoying, it's okay. If you're suffering, then you think about liberation. Right? Does that make sense? You know, as long as material nature is providing, then it's nice. She's a nice mom. But if not, then I'll become her husband. And that way, then I'll control her. You know, it's not so. Yeah, it's weird. Like you're saying, you know, had a kid like that, you'd lock him up.
Yeah.
Right? However, this usage of the term is incorrect because materialistic science is not vigyan in the true sense of the word. It means if you're just defining shankhya, then it can be vigyan because you're seeing material knowledge in relationship to the Lord. But if it's seen just on its own, then it's no meaning. As we see is that Shankhya of Kapila, that's vigyan, that's transcendent. But this non-theistic Shankhya is not. Hmm. Right? It's talking about the material mechanics. So some of the mechanics it's got right, but then why those mechanics are going on, what is the cause of it, what is the ultimate goal of it, that then it's totally in ignorance. They can't put it together at all. The truth is that Shuddhigyan, whose characteristics are contrary to the material sciences of Ayurveda, etc., is actually Vigyan, since Shuddhigyan intrinsically indicates the scientific distinction of transcendence from matter. Accurate knowledge of the distinctive qualities inherent within an existing object is known as Vigyan. Right? actual knowledge of the distinctive qualities inherent within an existing object. So what's the actual qualities? So that means because it's the energy of the Lord, then it has to be connected to the Lord. Then you're actually seeing its intrinsic nature. So its potency is coming from the Lord. The reason it has a particular form is because of the connection to the Lord. The reason you have to deal with that form in a particular way to get the result is due to the connection with the Lord. Right? That our attraction to it is the connection to the Lord. So in other words, inherently, whatever is there, it's only functioning because of that connection with the Lord.
So that's the Nitya Dharma.
Yes. It means if you see that. But if you don't, you think that just the mechanics of it. But the point is all they do is take care of the body. So what did it do for you, for the soul? So therefore, it's a waste of time. Right? Nevertheless, if you don't get... It means you're doing effort. And if there's no benefit, why would you say that it's useful? Right? So one is dealing with knowledge or with the body, making these various endeavors. But if no one's benefited, why would you call it good? But you can say, okay, so even if I, the soul, don't get, but the family and society gets benefit. But the point is the family is not the body either. So no jiva gets any benefit. So that is a waste of time. So only when it's connected to the Lord, then there's a benefit. Then it's real. Does that make sense? Accurate knowledge of the distinctive qualities inherent within an existing object is known as vijnana. Thus, the perfect realization of the spiritual absolute object, as distinct from mundane matter, is actually vijnana. Right? So that's the point. It's to distinguish matter from spirit. Right? That's what it says. Bhagavatam is that's what it's doing. So that's real knowledge. Right? That's real. And to help others see that, that's the welfare work. Right? Therefore, the process of exposing and eliminating Vishaya Jnana and scientifically establishing the preeminence of Shuddha Jnana as distinct from Vishaya Jnana is real Vijnana. Mm. Right, so you're taking the two areas of knowledge. So knowing the one and establishing it over the other and the distinction between them, that's your Vijnana.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? Yeah. Vastu, eternal spiritual existence, is one. Right? Vastu means existence. Right? And both terms, jnana and vijnana, may be applied to the perception of this transcendental existence. Jnana is the direct perception of transcendence, and vijnana is the establishment of this jnana as distinct from vishaya jnana. Jnana and vijnana are actually the same thing. However, according to the particular context, the term jnana and or vijnana is used. Right? So in other words, to be able to perceive it is knowledge. To be able to establish its position as superior, that's vijnana. Right? Because you can see it, but then to be able to work to establish that this is, then that's considered the, you call that vijnana. So it's the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Does Vishaya Gyan refer to knowledge trying to get enjoyments, like material?
No, Vishaya just means material. It's just thing in the material world. But the point is why it would be defined as material is because there is some benefit to be gained from it. You know what I'm saying? So when you're dealing with the knowledge, let's say, of liberation, then you could say that it is transcendental knowledge. Like, we'll say the impersonalists are transcendentalists. But the problem is because it's temporary, it still carries that material quality. Because for the soul, liberation is not actually important.
Mm-hmm.
Because the soul being transcendental, that's his normal situation. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense?
Thank you.
The person is asleep. And he's trying to establish himself, you know, in the room, but he's already in the room.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? All he has to do is wake up to understand it. It's not that by waking up, he became in the room.
Mm.
right? You know, because in his dream he's off doing so many different things and this and that. But the point is he always was. So one's already transcendentally situated, just the soul thinks he's not. So liberation isn't actually very important. So it's not therefore even put on. So here's material knowledge. So material means you're trying to get, you don't see it in connection to the Lord. That's all. You see it in connection to the Lord. Then, depending, it's either directly about the Lord, then it's paravidya. And if it's not directly about the Lord, it's about the material functioning, then it's aparavidya. You know, like he's giving here, Ayurveda and all these other sciences. So that's aparavidya. But, as Digambara was explaining it, that is avidya. Right? Prabhu was pointing out, because it's not connected to the Lord. So it's avidya, it's ignorance.
One should know side by side
things. Yes. Yes. Means in other words, you have to know what's the material, because otherwise, if you can't define what's material, how do you know that you're doing spiritual? It means you know you're spiritual, but there's all these other activities, so you have to know both. You have to know what to be doing and what not to be doing. You know, just like you have activities that are beneficial for devotional service and activities that are not. So you have to know both, like that. And so, yes, so that's a good point. So being able to tell the difference, that's vigyan. So you know spiritual knowledge, that's gyan. But to be able to distinguish between spiritual and material, that's vigyan. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes, so it says, according to the particular context, the term gyan or vigyan is used. They're the same thing. It's just the context. You so claim...
Vigyan has an element of practical application.
Yes, the practical, and being able to actually, you know, explain it or point it out. Because sometimes you understand something but can't explain it. So when you can explain it, that's called vigyan. When you understand it, that's gyan. When you can explain it, that's vigyan. Like that.
When you apply it, that's realization?
Yeah, it means when you're applying it from understanding, you know, the difference. It means, how do you say it? Manana, you're applying it, but you're trying to understand how it works and everything like that. And you may get an idea and go, but by doing that, then you realize its importance. So then you see the difference between performing it and not performing it. Like, you know, someone's chanting, because it's what you're supposed to do, so they're chanting. Okay, they've heard it's good to chant, so they're chanting. But the point is that could change. The vigyan means, no, chanting is the real thing. Other things are not. So you can tell the difference. Otherwise, there's not so much, you know, that was being given. The point is the Madhyama can tell more the difference. The neophyte doesn't always tell the difference, you know, in association or things like that. So sometimes they'll think it doesn't matter who you associate or what's the quality or like this. So that being able to actually distinguish, then that would be the nididhyasana. But that comes by the practice and contemplation. If you're not contemplating it, how will you understand? And if you're not practicing it, how will you also, you know, be able to apply it? So you understand it and you can apply it. So that becomes a big yam. Does that work? You claim that vigyan indicates vishayagyan. However, the Vaishnavas say that actually vigyan gives the true analysis of vishayagyan as distinct from shuddhagyan. Right? So he's saying vigyan, it just means material knowledge, means Digambara is saying. But he's saying, no, when you can tell the difference between material and spiritual, that's vigyan. Right? Because you have material knowledge, spiritual knowledge. Telling the difference between the two, that's vigyan. The Vaishnavas consider Dhanurved, Ayurved, Jyotirved, and chemistry, physics, etc., as material knowledge without a permanent relationship to the jiva. Right? So it's not permanent, so its only importance is, does it make money that you can maintain yourself? Basically. You know, if you can do that, it's useful. If it doesn't, why one would bother? You know, if you want to get into knowledge, you get into the Shuddha Gyan. Therefore, such material knowledge is inconsequential in terms of establishing the jiva in one of the five rasas in relationship to Ishwara, which is the ultimate nitya dharma of the jivas. In other words, that's not going to establish anything anywhere. Okay, now here, do you understand what happened here in the discussion? That this Digambar, his position is just so out there. And he's, dealt in such a nice way, trying to ask, and he's come up with all these things, and he's basically explained his whole philosophy. Now it's kind of like, okay, I'm just going to explain Vaishnavism directly. And so if it makes him upset and he goes away, great. And if he understands it and he, takes up, great. Either way it doesn't. So he's decided here just to speak directly. In other words, if the person is so wild, you don't bother tiptoeing around. Mm-hmm. Right? You just speak direct and they'll either catch it because it's just so, blunt, yeah. Or they'll get upset and go away.
Yeah. And both are fine.
Yeah. Furthermore, the Vaishnavas see that those who are ardently striving to advance in Vishaya Jnana, according to their individual material propensities, are absorbed in the activities of karmakanda. Right? So they're developing all this science just so that they can materially progress and enjoy the material nature. Otherwise, why? What's the point? Right? So then it's a matter of you have this knowledge, but if you don't engage it in the Lord's service, what's the meaning? What's the meaning of all these things? Find food, find clothes, find social interactions, unless it's connected to the Lord. However, Vaishnavas do not criticize those who endeavor for progress in understanding the mundane nature, because this activity may ultimately come to assist them in understanding the prime efficacy of spiritual realization, because eventually you figure out this is not very useful. You have misnamed the insignificant mundane knowledge of the materialist as vijnana. Well, ultimately, what harm can the erroneous adoption of that name do? It is childish to quarrel incessantly over names and designations. So he's saying, you've misapplied the word, but what's the use in fighting over it? There's no big deal, right? There's nothing to be gained by fighting over the term. All materialistic men executing their works, inspired by the mundane propensities, reach success by indirectly assisting the Vaishnavas in their spiritual practice. The materialists are, however, unaware of this fact. Bewitched by Sri Vishnu's illusory potency, Maya, they perform multifarious mundane activities, which are later utilized by the Vaishnavas in the devotional service of the Lord. In this way, the entire world is actually the unwitting servitor of the Vaishnavas. Right? So now he's turned the whole tables. You're just sitting there doing all this thing and thinking we're so great. But what you're doing is actually only used properly by the Vaishnavas in the Lord's service. So our point is you can say, oh, but material science makes all these things. It's only because they made it we use it. If they didn't make it, we wouldn't use it. You know what I'm saying? If they didn't have an airplane, we'd walk. Isn't it? Yeah, so it's just a la carte. You're worried about getting there a little quicker. Digambar, what is this Maya of Sri Vishnu, right? Because he's mentioned that, so he caught that. Advaita Das, in the Markandeya Purana, Chandi Mahatmya, 81:40, it is described with these words. Yoga Maya is the potency of Sri Vishnu by which the whole world is bewildered. Digambar, who is that personality known as Ma Nishtarini? Advaita Das, she is the Maya of Sri Vishnu, also known as Vishnu Maya. Right, so in other words, now he's caught that they're talking about the same thing. Right? But it's Vishnu's Maya, not that she created Vishnu. At this point, Digambar opened his handwritten manuscript on Tantra and said, here, read. My Ma Nishtarini is addressed as Chaitanya Rupini, embodying spiritual consciousness. Icha Mayi, fully independent. Trigunatita, transcendental to the material modes. And Trigunadharani, the controller of the material modes. Right, so all of those are correct, but under the Lord's, just because she is that doesn't mean that she's not under the Lord's control. Because if she's not under the Lord's control, right, then what's the meaning of you becoming, you know, Sada Shiva and becoming her husband, right? Because if the husband doesn't control the wife, what's the meaning? You know what I'm saying? So so this concept of independence, that she's completely independent, has nothing to do. Then the point is you're under her now, you'll be under her as a husband. Right? Does that make sense? So it doesn't match. The point is it's not that being independent doesn't mean that she's not under someone's control. She's not under your control. That's the point. You know? The one you call Vishnu Maya is not beyond the scope of the three material modes of nature. Then how can you equate her with my Ma Nishtarini, who is so transcendentally described? I can see plainly that you Vaishnavas are fanatical in terms of this topic, and I strongly detest it. Right? Everything's so emotional and so, you know, disgusted by everything. Right? Advaita Das. Oh, no, we're done for the day.
Om Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Jai Śrīla Prabhupāda ki
Jai
Samaveda Bhaktivedanta ki
Jai
Shaina Jai Gaura Prema
Hare Hare